Chapter 4, Art Imitates Life. The landscape from between the bars of my moving prison began to change. Instead of flat, rocky fields, pointed stalagmites started to clutter the earth, and I thought I saw water glimmering at their bases. A rotten smell filled the air, and I couldn't help but crinkle my nose in disgust. Who would want to choose to live here? Oscar the Grouch, or maybe my old PE teacher, Mr. Miller. I pinched my nostrils with my fingers and realized the dark pointed spire I'd been walking toward before getting put into the carriage had disappeared. Hey, where'd that tower go? One of Malik's friends shook his head as though I'd just fallen off the turnip cart and pointed through the bars. I turned and craned my neck to see a huge castle perched on a rocky hill. The road was leading straight for it, and we were close. More soldiers on horseback trotted past us, saluting the men leading our caravan. Signs hung over shadowy doorways announcing taverns and lodging to passers-by. Other storefronts appeared to have been long since closed and were boarded up. The butcher shop, bookstore, and apothecary. Men dressed in black leather armor wandered through the streets, and none of them seemed to notice the faces peering out at them from inside our carriage. I was struck by the fact that there were no women or children here. The faces I saw were dark and angry. There were no smiles or words of friendship in this place. Everything was bleak and hopeless. No color in this world, unless you considered black a color. Nim, stay awake. We're almost there. We'll be in the dungeon soon enough and hopefully one step closer to freeing my boy. Malik whispered into my ear. He adjusted his dusty blue tunic and rested his hands on his knees. Minutes later, the carriage stopped, making all its prisoners sway toward the front. Men called out from nearby, "More recruits!" Keys jangled and boots scuffed on the gravel outside. The door swung open. With an annoyed scowl, Pete said, "All right, one at a time, let's go." Around me, the prisoners stood up and Malik waved for us to follow suit. I shuffled to my feet and squeezed in behind him. One at a time, we filtered out of the carriage and onto a large gravel drive. The enormous stone building loomed above us. Down the road, a tower rose into the gloomy cloud cover, disappearing from sight. The castle walls wrapped around its base and seemed impenetrable. Wind blew past, whistling in my ears, and I shivered as a chill touched my bare skin. Guards walked over to meet our group, and I felt their curious stares as they studied my clothing. I focused on my ratty slippers and gave an unhappy sigh. Anything would have been better than what I was wearing now, and I had a feeling things were only going to get colder in the stone castle. Wasn't this enough misery for one dream?
Oi! Pay attention! Fall into line! You try anything, and you'll get run through, you hear me?
Startled to find a rotund guard yelling at me, I hurried to catch up to Malik, who had already begun to walk through a doorway. We were guided down two flights of stairs, and at each level it seemed to grow even colder. Rather than continuing further into the bowels of the castle, we turned through another doorway. Rows of iron bars lined a large room, creating four prison cells. A crowd of people were already in them, except one, and they moved back against the rocky walls as we approached.
"Brought you some friends," one of the guards said as he pulled a large key from his belt.
He unlocked the empty cell and shoved Malik's friends inside.
"Well, are you waiting for an invitation? Get in, but don't get comfortable. We'll be back to sort you out."
What did that mean? I didn't get to wonder too long because the guard grabbed me by the arm, tossed me inside along with the others, and locked the door. Malik caught me just as I ran into him. I watched the grumpy soldier filter out of the room as I rubbed my arm, and then I took in my surroundings. If I had ever been unhappy with my old room, this was reason enough to be thankful. The prison cell was dirty, dark, and cold, and filled with sooty, gloomy prisoners. Mom, on repeated occasions, had encouraged me to find the silver lining of a situation. If I had to find one now, I would have had to say it was the bale of hay to sit on. But it smelled like it was the bathroom to a family of mice, and before I knew it, I was counting all the reasons why I was ready to wake up.
Nim, don't get settled. We won't be here long, Malik muttered to me. I shrugged. That was doubtful, based on my bad luck. I imagined a conversation with Aunt Holly.
Hey, Nim, how'd you sleep? Oh, great. I dreamt I sat in a cold prison for 8 hours, and you?
But the thing was, I was starting to question that this was really a dream. Crazy, I know. But everything seemed so real. The strangest thing, the thing that bugged me the most, was the fact I appeared to be in my story. How was that possible? It wasn't, so clearly I was going crazy. Like, lock me up and keep me from society because I might start speaking gibberish crazy.
Nim?
Malik's voice pulled me from my thoughts.
Yeah?
You all right?
Just awesome.
Time for some answers. So, where are we? I figured I'd start with the basics. We're in the city of Valen, or what's left of it. Under King Slag's control, it's become a sad and depressing place.
King Slag?
That was too close for comfort.
Aye, a self-appointed king. For a long time, he kept to his own land to the north, but as he grew more powerful, poisoning the innocent with his evil magic, he spread like a sickness.
My curiosity piqued, and I asked, and what's up with that huge tower?
That's where Prince Braylon keeps Princess Amarovia, the poor dear.
The hairs on the back of my neck stood on end, and I glanced over at a couple of the other prisoners, who shared a knowing look and continued to stare at the cold stone floor. The soft whispers from the neighboring cells quieted when her name was spoken, and dirty faces turned toward us. Exactly as I had written it, it wasn't completely uncommon for me to dream about my stories, so this wouldn't be off base, but it just didn't feel right. I hadn't filled in any details about this ghost town or the characters I was with now. I'd only set the scene. I groaned and dropped my forehead into my hands. Where was this all taking me?
You okay, son?
I slowly straightened up and blinked. I was so far from okay. It wasn't funny. But there was no need to let Malik know just how mentally unbalanced I was. I flashed a cheesy grin at him and heard him mutter under his breath, "Kids." Whatever was going on, I was going to get to the bottom of it.
So, why does he keep her prisoner? I asked.
You're clearly not from our land if you don't know their story. It is a long and tragic one. They were once in love and set to be married. Their union was going to bind the neighboring kingdoms. Prince Braylon was appointed to the throne here in Valen after his parents died, and Princess Amarovia is King Richard's daughter. My blank stares prompted Malik to give a more detailed response. He is the ruler of Revel Green, the land from where we come.
Get to the good part, Malik. No need to bore the boy with the details, one of Malik's friends chimed in.
Boy, if you'd stop interrupting me, I could get to it.
Malik shot over his shoulder.
So the prince was always a bit of a daredevil. I hear the ladies like that in a man. Well, anyway, he and the princess were out for a ride, and they traveled too close to the outskirts of Slag's territory, where they were ambushed. Prince Braylon's heart was pierced with the magic from Slag's staff, and since then, Braylon's been under the Evil One's control. Princess Amarovia was taken prisoner and bound before she could use her magic to help.
The princess has magic? I was surprised. I had never written anything like that. To be honest, I hadn't written most of this. Definitely a dream.
Indeed. You see, the Elder Tree is the life force of our land, and Princess Amarovia is linked to it with magic. It is her job to keep it healthy. From every generation, a child is born that is linked to it, and when one protector dies, a new one is born to take his or her place. Only the protector can heal the tree and tap into its energy. Since the tree was killed and drained of power, the princess can do nothing but sit in her tower alone.
I assumed he was talking about the tree I'd seen earlier.
How was it killed? I asked, frowning.
There you go, leaving out the important parts, confusing the boy, one of the men said from the corner of the cell. We may not be in our land anymore, but I'm still your commanding officer.
leave a man to tell a story in peace, would you?"
Malik responded. He ignored the muffled comments that followed and instead looked at me. The elder tree was set ablaze right after the princess was captured, but without her there to heal it, the earth began to die, and a deep sadness fell over the hearts of her people. Malik pulled off his cap and squeezed it in his hands. I was mesmerized. My story was so much richer than I'd written it, or even imagined. My curiosity took over and I wanted answers. I leaned forward and asked, "Isn't there a way she can still save the land?" "It is said that the elder tree has a seed within its roots that, if planted by the protector, our dear princess, will reawaken the tree. But King Richard has sent me and my men to search for it many times over, and we never found such seed. I'm not sure if he's in his right mind anymore. He may only wish it, so he has some kind of hope to hold on to. But even if it were real, it must surely be dead since so much time has passed. The sad ending to this story is, since the princess is the only one who can heal the tree and save our land, and she's locked up tight in her tower, we may never see the light of the sun again." I remembered the black, shiny stone I had found in the tree's roots.
"You ever seen it?
What it looks like?"
"The seed?
It is said it glows blue and is warm like the sun on a summer's day." Well, I definitely didn't have the elder seed in my pocket then. There had to be a way for this story to end well. I thought of the beautiful face I'd pictured when I wrote the princess's character. If I could catch a glimpse of her, this dream couldn't be so bad. Why hasn't King Richard tried rescuing her from the tower? Noise outside the room echoed down the hall, and he paused for a moment. When it became clear nobody was there, Malik continued in a soft voice. "Everything is in a deadlock. Prince Braylon convinced King Slag that it was in his best interest to keep her in the tower as a threat to her father. King Richard has a mighty army, but his weakness is his daughter. As long as she's safe in her tower, he will not fight. Slag made it clear if any step was made to free her or attack Valen, he would throw her from the tower. But we all know he's more concerned with the problem it would make for him if he were to kill the Elder Tree's protector." It all made sense.
"You mean, then he'd have to find the next born protector?"
Malik beamed at me and turned to his friends.
"See, he's a smart kid. He wouldn't have followed if I weren't a good storyteller. Always giving me a hard time."
"But what about Braylon? Think he loves her still, and maybe that's why he doesn't want her killed?" Malik's voice echoed off the icy walls.
"Could be why he never executed her like he was ordered to. There may be a small part of Braylon's heart that didn't turn to stone, that still beats for her. But it's not enough to make a difference."
"What about Braylon? Is there a way to change him back?"
"If the elder tree wasn't dead, I suppose there'd be hope, but we can't turn him back now. Once you've been pierced by Slag's staff, there's no coming round. That's why I must find my son quickly. Any who defy King Slag share in Prince Braylon's fate."
Malik seemed to remember the crowd of other inmates in the neighboring cells and lowered his eyes. He sat next to me on the bale of hay and waited a few minutes until the other men listening decided there wasn't anything further to hear, and went back to their previous conversations. He tilted his head toward me and said in my ear,
"If you want to escape with us, you must listen carefully to my instructions. This plan won't work if any one thing goes wrong."
Well then, he definitely shouldn't have included me in the plan. My bad luck had clearly followed me into this strange, twisted dream. All I wanted at this point was to wake up. This place was depressing. I had already gotten hurt and jailed. What next?
"You listening, Nim? Braylon's men should be coming back soon to sort us. The fools who resist enlistment are pierced with Slag's staff to ensure full cooperation. If I taught my boy right, he should have pledged loyalty without going that route. I'm counting on it, in fact. You must show fealty to Braylon and Slag's army. My son was taken only a few days ago, so he should be in training now. We have a man on the inside that will leave a grate to the sewers unlatched. A carriage will be waiting for us at the outlet. Stick with us, and we should make it out.
Let's hope Braylon isn't there, because he knows I'm a general in King Richard's army. That would change the situation right quick. I wouldn't want to risk Amarovia's safety. Wouldn't want Slag thinking we were here to rescue the princess. Malik looked at the other men who had joined us in our carriage ride, standing protectively around us now. Okay. Let's hope Braylon's not there then. I hope the rain cloud over my head wouldn't affect the outcome either. Good lad. How's your knee doing? Not going to slow you down, I hope? I looked at my dirty, torn sweats and stretched my leg. My knee stung, but I figured it wouldn't stop me from busting out of jail or whatever this place was. Should be okay. I let my head drop back to rest against the iron bars behind me, and I tried to get comfortable, which was near impossible. I sat like that for a while before clinking sounds echoed from outside the room. All of the prisoners faced the doorway, and I wondered what would happen next.